Good morning. Welcome to Voice to the Voiceless. And this is your host, Bronwyn Franklin. Thank you for joining me today. I know it's been a while since I've been on. It's been a while since I posted anything. But lately I've been thinking about grief. And today I want to talk about the impacts of grief and how I think we're being conditioned to process grief and the different levels that are connected to that. It's the holiday season. And many of us have lost loved ones over the years, and it's impacted us. COVID-19 shattered so many people's norms, so many people's families, so many people's relationships and connections, and it destroyed communities around the world. And that's hard. That's truly hard. We as a society understand that grief is a part of life. We understand that grief is a part of our lives. It's a part of the circle of life, you know. When I was growing up, there was a saying, you know, there's two things guaranteed when you're born, taxes and death. You know, and that's true. The day that we take our first breath into this world, the destiny at the end of the journey is death. And I'm going to kind of switch it up and use the word transitioning, because I feel like we're transitioning from one realm of being to another realm of being. So what brought this on to me was, you know, and like I said, we've lost communities of people, friends, families, loved ones, classmates, children, adults, older people. COVID-19 seemed to have escalated our grief. And what triggered this for me is because one evening I went out to take my dog for a walk, and I seen a familiar sight that I've seen before in the city of Detroit, and I've also experienced. Down the block were police cars. There was two police cars and they were just sitting there. And that told me, because of the stillness, the lack of urgency, that it wasn't an emergency. And then the crowd that was gathered outside the house of young people. Well, young and old, middle-aged, but mostly young people. And there was no commotion. There was no arguing. There was no anger. But what I found eerily strange was there was no crying. But at that moment, I realized someone had transitioned. Somebody had died. And I didn't know who. But I just, it just was, it just stood out to me. No one was crying. That felt odd to me at the moment. But then I reflected back to two incidents that had occurred in my life. The first one being May of 2020, when that same scene appeared at my door, the morning my dad died. And the police were there. And then the family came. And we were all there. And none of us were crying. We were all in shock. We were all in shock. So my understanding protocol is when someone passes away or transitions at home in a house, it is mandatory that the police come out to make sure that it's not a crime scene. And they stay on scene until the coroner or the mortuary funeral director, whatever terminology you use, comes and transports the body to a new location. Then about 15 months ago, I pulled up. I was looking for a friend of mine, so I pulled up to his friend's house, and I saw him out there. But again, four or five police cars was out there. I immediately got nervous because I'm like, you know, what's happened? You know, did somebody get arrested? Was there, what happened? Because this friend of mine is a former felon. They're a returned citizen from prison. And I'm just hoping that they hadn't gotten in trouble, you know. But it was his sister. His sister had died in another friend's car. And again, like I say, police come on the scene to make sure that it was not foul play, that it was not a crime scene. And, you know, the ambulance come out and they try to perform CPR. If there's not a do not resuscitate, you know. And then the EMS or the emergency medical system, they leave. They don't stay around. After they pronounce it, they're gone. So I pull up and I see all these police. And our friend's wife, which I'll call her Judy. Judy came over to tell me that my friend, and I'm gonna call him Bruce, sister had passed away in her car. Judy's husband had went to pick up Bruce's sister the night before. Bruce's sister had called. She was highly intoxicated, highly self-medicated, and I'm not sure what the substance of choice was, but she was impaired. So Judy's husband went and got Bruce's sister and drove back to his house and pulled up in his yard and couldn't wake Bruce's sister up. So Judy's husband went in the house and went to bed. Judy came out to go to work the next morning. And that's when they discovered that Bruce's sister had died. This is a 54-year-old woman who, about 10 months prior, had lost her son to fentanyl poisoning. He was smoking marijuana, and they found him sitting on his porch, deceased, but he's still with his marijuana. And he was about 35 or 36. So tragedy is everywhere. And many of us may have lost people to fentanyl poisoning as well, and other substance use overdoses. But back to my neighbor the other night. I don't remember the man or the person. I don't know who he is. I've not lived in this area, in this particular house, for almost 10 years. So a lot of people around, I don't know. But it just was so eerie to see that. And then I thought about it. It's like, this family is in shock. I know what that shock feels like. And I think about corporate freaking America and how they give you 3 days to grieve. In 3 days, you haven't processed the whole shock of it. You have not processed the whole journey of being without your loved one. Different religious and spiritual backgrounds, such as the Jewish community, and maybe others, I don't know. Bury their dead within 3 days. And it has to definitely be before the Sabbath. And that's been written for 6,000 years or more. You know, I don't know what other people's burial rituals look like, or their services look like, or whatever their ritual may be around their person, their loved one. Everybody is different. Through my journey, grief looked different for me, and everybody's grief looks different. And because of my spiritual beliefs, I believe that there's a heaven and a hell, and we transition to a different plane of being. Back in 2003, and if you listen to any of my previous podcasts or anything, you know that I've been to prison. So back in 2003, my mother passed away. She died the day before Mother's Day. And it was a shock because I knew she was sick, but I didn't know how sick she was. And I had been so selfish. And she had been selfish too. That our communication had never really been strong. We were too much alike and too stubborn and too strong-willed. And we never really had a close mother-daughter relationship. And it continued because I had so much anger and animosity and bitterness towards my mother for some of the childhood abuse and neglect and trauma that I had experienced. And during the time that I was in prison, my mom had always had, always, even when we were kids, she had a block on her phone, no collect calls. So I was not able to call my mom or talk to my mom. So there'd be long periods of time. That I had not seen or talked to my mom. So I did not know the level of her cancer. So anyway, I was in prison when my dad came that morning, right out, not within hours of her transitioning, to tell me. And because of the shock, I was not able to cry. And I never cried because I was in a prison setting where I could not show signs of weakness by grieving my mother. Grieving in that system, in that penal, oppressive system, is viewed as weakness. You're not allowed to feel. You're not allowed to feel the pain, the hurt, the emptiness, the void that you feel in your heart, in your chest. So when I seen this family out here, I can relate. It resonated to me, the grief, the shock. The shock. When I seen my friend Bruce out there trying to process his little sister's passing, showing no signs because they're in shock and trying to process. And the fact that somewhere in our society, we have been taught not to be weak, not to feel our feelings, not to show the feelings that we're feeling. We have been conditioned to suck it up, especially men, especially those that's in prison, especially those who have something else going on in their lives. It's not okay to grieve, is what it feels like. No, that's not the message, but that's what it feels like. Excuse me. In corporate America, you only get 3 days off work for bereavement. What kind of crap is that? If my husband dies, or my mother dies, or my father dies, these are people that are so closely connected to me. They are a part of my normal everyday life. And you tell me I have 3 days to be bereaved, and then it's back to normal, back to business as usual, back to making me dollars, back to bringing in the income to my corporation. You don't matter. Your feelings don't matter. Your hurt doesn't matter. Your pain doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. Because 3 days, I'm still in shock. I'm still trying to process this. I'm still trying to wrap my mind and my heart and my being and my soul around this. What is this? I look at, and the sad part about it is, sometimes the bereavement takes months, takes years. Another instance of, and the reason why I say it takes years is because also while I was in prison, I had my baby boy was murdered. He was 21 years old. He was out. He suffered from mental health challenges. And my mom was gone. And in the Black community, the sad part about it is it's so stigmatized to have a mental health condition that you are ostracized from your family. So he was homeless. I was in prison. The kid, and there was a report written about that, about the homeless, and I think it was written in 2006 about the violence that goes against the homeless people, and my son's name is mentioned in it. The young guy basically said he wanted to F up the bum. F up the bum. Gotcha. Anyway, and he was 15, so he did juvenile time for 2 years and he was released. But again, this is my son and I'm in prison. This is my baby. And I could not grieve my child. I didn't know how. I didn't have support. I didn't have the people I needed to help me put that together. I had to be strong. And in both cases, I was able to go to a special viewing service to see my mom and say goodbye. And the same with my son. I was able to do it and have some family members around me. But I was only allowed 1 hour. 1 hour to see my son and say goodbye forever. Or until we meet again, till I make that transition. That was 2006. My grieving for my son didn't start till 2009. My grieving process did not start till I stood at his gravesite and cry. And corporate America wants us to process this crap in 3 days. People want us to process this in 3 days with no support, with no counseling, with no understanding. I don't know. And the sad part about processing my son, when I opened that up, I had to process my mom. Because these are things that I hadn't processed. I hadn't been able to process. So my grieving period started in 2009. And to add to that, 2008, I was not in prison, but I was still in that conditioned mode when my baby brother died in October. And I was not able to grieve because I didn't know how I had been suppressing the prior two deaths so long. I didn't know what I should do and what I shouldn't do, what was okay and what was not okay. I didn't trust my feelings. I didn't trust my thoughts. I didn't trust the pain in my heart. I didn't trust because I hadn't been allowed to sit with it in a safe space. So in the process of 5 years, I lost 3 very, very close people to me. My mother, my son, and my baby brother. And I hadn't been able to grieve it. I didn't know how. Because I was conditioned in this institution where that was not okay. That was not a safe place to do it. Reflecting back to many people that I know who have been inside those walls or are still inside those walls, who are losing family members, who have lost family members. During that same time and on, I have a son that's incarcerated. He was incarcerated not long after I was. So he's lost his grandmother. He's lost his brother. He's lost both sets of grandparents. He's lost his dad, his paternal grandparents while he's been in there. He lost my mom and dad. He lost his brother. He's lost 3 uncles. And he hasn't had support on how to process that. He's not been allowed to because it's weak to grieve in the penal system. This man has done 27 years and has buried, had to deal with a good part of losing his family. Some he was close to and some he was not. His baby brother, my parents, my brother. Grief is hard. There was somebody wrote a book and they talked about the five stages of grief. And I say it's more than five stages of grief. It was Elizabeth Kubler Ross who wrote this book called Five Stages of Grief. And in the book, they talk about, you know, and it's definitely nonlinear. You go through denial. You do go through anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. But then there's, like I said, shock. So there's another level of shock. It's not denial, it's shock. Then there's the denial. You know? And it's a cycle and it's nonlinear. So you could be at any of those stages at any time. You know? And yes, you may get to a place of acceptance, but then you may cycle back to anger or depression. And there's no time limit on that. It doesn't happen in three freaking days. Some of this stuff take a lifetime. Holiday time. It's hard on a lot of people. Birthdays, anniversary dates are hard on people. Some idiots say grief usually diminishes in 1 to 2 years. Not so. Because those dates and holidays and death dates, birth dates, holidays, reactivates pain and emptiness, depression, and who knows what else? Who knows what else? Every year, Mother's Day is hard because my mom died the Saturday before Mother's Day, so I'm grieving that actual date, that Saturday, the Mother's Day thing, the whole nine yards, and there's people celebrating their mothers.
and I don't have one to celebrate anymore. My son's birthday, his death day, are hard. Some days I don't want to get out the bed. Holidays. So now this is a season and it's really, really hard because what I've noticed over the years is October, November, December, and January, there's a lot of people that pass away. There's a lot of heart attacks, a lot of strokes. People are stressed out trying to do all of this stuff and overdo stuff for holidays, and people are passing away, heart attacks. Upcoming to Thanksgiving, right after Thanksgiving, upcoming to Christmas. Had a girlfriend lost her mama Christmas Day. You know, mother cooked a fabulous dinner the night before, was up all day yet Christmas Eve and all night cooking, and then laid down and did, and that was done. Her heart stopped. People are grieving. People are hurting. So, again, this is a hard, tough season for so many of us. And just know you're not alone. If you are grieving the loss of someone that was very, very special to you in some way or another, including your pets. I'm watching a friend of mine now. She just had to put her dog down and she's grieving that. He was a part of her family. And she's grieving that and she's processing through that. So just know that you're not alone. You know, we got this misconception that holiday time, it's just big party. We're going to party. We're going to celebrate. And people are putting on these masks and pretending to be happy and full of joy and full of life. But they're masking the pain. Because we can't see what's in the heart. We can't see what's in the mind. We just see the expression on the faces and the pretending. You know, and just know, at least almost 60% of the people in America, up to 60% of the people in America can admit that they feel depression and anxieties and stress throughout the months of November and December. You know, many of us cry in secret. We cry in places because we don't want people to see us cry. We don't want to spoil the joy. But I want you to know that your loved one is never that far away. They are right there with you. They are still in your heart. They are still in your memory. They are still in your presence. You know, their shell of a body transitioned. It shut down. But the spirit and soul and life still lives on. So remember, when you have some of those memories, remember the good times and smile. Because death can be blinding to us. And it can reorganize the way we think. And yes, accept that we will never be the same again. Life is not the same. That moment changed. Yes, you can't reach out and hold them or touch them. But think about that funny thing that they did or they said, because words come back to you sometimes and you can hear that voice and you can get that chill down your spine. And just know that that's them touching you and moving around you, you know. And when you're in the room and you feel like somebody's in the room with you, just know that your loved one is there. They're right there beside you. They're right there beside you. So we do not have to conform to the conditioning of this world. We have choices. We have different ways of connecting. And if we start practicing and realizing that we have choices and that we can connect and that we can communicate. By choosing, I mean, you know you. You have a PhD in your lived experience, in your life. So you know what's best for you. So choose as you are able what is best for you. Because in the beginning of grief, it's hard to know what's best for you. It's hard to figure it out. It's hard because you got voices from people and places and everybody's around you. And that's, I mean, for me, it was just confusing and overwhelming because everybody was around. Everybody was talking. Everybody had something. Everybody had a story. Everybody had something. You know, and it was hard to think. It was overwhelming. But if you can try to remember, you have a choice. And being able to choose what is best for you. You know, again, don't let yourself feel like it's out of control. Because it will feel like it's out of control. Everything is out of control. It's like, ugh. No. Connect. Connect. So sometimes, and I heard this saying. And I've seen it happen. Once the celebration of life, the funeral or the services or whatever it is done, you are alone. All those people that were coming, all those people that was calling, all those people that was sitting around, you know, they're not there anymore. And now you are sitting there by yourself with your thoughts, with your feelings. And it's coming in. And it can be isolating. And it can be lonely. Try to remain connected to somebody.
try to reach out to somebody that you feel is going to give you a safe space. A safe space to just sit, if that's what you want. A safe place to let you just talk, if that's what you want. A safe place to just sleep, if that's what you want. Because you have a choice. But connect with somebody. You don't have to be alone after all of it's over. I have to say, I think the connecting piece is essential. It's a whole big part of helping you adjust to a different way of being. I'm not going to use the word normal, a way of being, you know, of being in the here and the now, being in the present, you know. Nobody can fix our grief. Nobody can change our grief. Nobody can throw it away. Because that was a piece of your heart. That's a memory that you will carry eternally. But just having another person present. Again, sometimes you don't need to talk. Can be helpful. Just having a safe space of being. Huge, huge. So choose what's best for you. Connect with somebody that's going to give you a safe space. And finally, communicate. Again, we have been conditioned to not be able to ask for what we need. But during a time of grief, and you may not even know what you need. You know, it might just start off with having that safe space to connect and having a quiet moment. And it may come up then. What you need, but be willing to be open and honest about what you need and what works best for you at the moment. And that'll help friends and families know how to come alongside of you and support you. And remember, our friends and family are grieving as well. And this is how we support one another. When we come together and we are able to communicate openly and honestly what we need, they may need it too. And they don't know how to communicate it, or they hadn't thought about it because they're still processing. I think it's a lot of love and compassion in doing that. And yes, when we're communicating and connecting, it's okay to cry. It's okay to break down. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to talk about our fears. This is going to help us with our healing. When I talk, about tears and crying, and I'm a strong believer that crying is important to cleansing and healing. And again, I have a Christian background, and I believe that God gave us tears. Everybody has tears. We all have tears. We all have tear ducts.
And when we are experiencing these unpleasant things and emotions, those tears roll down and they're wet like water. And what do we do with water? We clean things. Water, we wash dishes, we wash clothes, we wash our car, we mop our floors, we wash our bodies. We use water to do it. And tears are water. And they help with the pain. Tears, water also helps seeds grow. And as we cleanse ourselves of the and heal ourselves of the hurt and pain, we're allowing new seeds of wisdom, acceptance, and love to grow. I am looking at a meme on a page called HopeDuringLoss.com. And it says, I will not hide my grief as I did not hide my love. That's powerful. One of the worst things we can do is isolate and put on that mask. We didn't, when we loved on these people, places, animals, family, when we loved on them, we showed it openly. So why are we hiding our grief that they have moved on to a different state of being? Why are we hiding that? Why are we putting that mask on? Take time to love on yourself. Choose what is best for you. Communicate with others. Connect. Choose, connect, communicate. And again, I'm pretty sure there are some other levels. Of helping move through that process. For me, prayer is another one. For me, talking to my ancestors, talking to them, and having that conversation, and remembering the good times, and remembering the laughter, sharing with them some of my thoughts and feelings about how things are going in my day, because I believe that the spirit, that we then move in a spiritual realm. We are in a spiritual realm. We move in a spiritual realm. So my spirits are around me. I was talking to my brother. He's a half brother. And his brother is a shaman. And he was saying that shamans believe that our loved ones don't leave this realm. It was either 5 years or 7 years, he told me, that they literally stay in our presence. They stay in this realm, you know, for a while. But I know that my family is with me. I carry them in my heart. I carry them in my memories. I carry them in my thoughts. And I sit down and I have those conversations. And sometimes I ask them to send me a helping hand. Because it's hard right now. And something will come. I'll either see a cardinal, and I've been seeing a lot of blue jays around me. You know, or I'll see something that's gonna make me laugh. Like this morning, I got up and I was looking at something. I was on Facebook, and every meme or every video I seen made me laugh. And I was like, okay, what a good way to start a Monday morning. Full of laughter, full of joy. You know, this is Christmas. It's the Christmas season. It's hard for me. Because when I was a kid, yeah, my mom, my brother, my sisters, my nephews, you know, people would come. We would have at home. Then I had my own family, and then I would cook. I had my kids. I had the three kids, my husband. I would do those things. But prison changed that. During that time in prison, that changed. When I came home, one son was locked up, one was deceased. My mom was gone. My dad had remarried. My brother lived out of state. I never got a true Christmas again. I never got that. It was always a hard holiday for me. It was always a hard holiday for me. It's even harder now. So now I have a new tradition. I decorate if I decorate, I don't if I don't. I just cook if I do, I cook if I don't. I find something to binge watch. Thank God for Netflix and the Amazon Prime, you know? And I just shut down and get through that day. I cry. But I get through it. And then I do what America expects us to do. Just get back up the next day and keep moving. Hey, nothing happened. Grief. But that's my processing, because that's what I've been conditioned to process. So as I sit here and I talk about choosing what's best for me, connecting, and communicating. It's a journey. And we don't have no GPS for this journey. There's no road maps. There's no paper maps. There's no rights, wrongs. It's life. And we're in the driver's seat. And we are possibly learning how to take control. So with that, I'm going to let you go back into your day and continue your journeys. And I wish you happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy. Let's see, what else is there? There's Kwanzaa, there's Hanukkah, Happy Hanukkah, you know. For my Canadian folks, happy Boxing Day. And whatever it is that you believe in, I wish you happiness and I wish you peace. And I send you love and light, you know, and be gentle with yourself during this transitional time.